Thank you very much. Wow.
In the early morning hours of November 6th, 2024, Donald Trump spoke before a crowd at his resort in Florida, declaring victory in the presidential election.
We overcame obstacles that nobody thought possible, and it is now clear that we've achieved the most incredible political thing. Look what happened. Is this crazy?
Trump acknowledged several people who supported him during the campaign and name-checked one guest in particular.
A few names like Robert F. Kennedy Jr., he came in.
The nephew of an American political icon and the son of another.
And he's going to help make America healthy again.
Who brought with him his own zealous devotees. Kennedy didn't necessarily dream that he would become something of a mascot for the Trump campaign in the run-up to Election Day. He had his sights set a bit higher. He hoped to be president. This is an ad that ran during the 2024 Super Bowl. It was a ripoff of an ad his Uncle Jack ran during his 1960 presidential campaign. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. wanted to be president, but by August, it was clear his campaign wasn't going anywhere, so he suspended it and threw his support behind Donald Trump.
And he said that he wanted to make America healthy again.
Kennedy is an environmental lawyer, but you'd be forgiven if you didn't know that. He came to prominence over the last 20 years as an anti-vaccine crusader who holds a variety of controversial opinions related to public health and who traffics heavily in conspiracy theories. But his support of Trump for president has been rewarded with a nomination for a cabinet position that would give him the power to utterly remake public health policy in the United States, power that President-elect Trump says would be largely unchecked. This is Trump on Kennedy during that victory speech.
And now he's a great guy, and he really means it. He wants to do some things, and we're going to let him go to it. I just said, but Bobby, leave the oil to me. We have more liquid gold, oil and gas. We have more liquid gold than any country in the world, more than Saudi Arabia. We have more than Russia. Bobby, stay away from the liquid gold. Other than that, go have a good time, Bobby.
We'll get back to that comment about oil later on in the show. Trump brings it up a lot. But other than that, Trump has said Kennedy can go wild on public health policy as Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services. This is a problem when the guy in charge of policy on the nation's vaccines is most famous for espousing long ago debunked views that can best be characterized as anti-science. That's where Dr. Peter Hotez comes in. He's fighting medical misinformation all day, every day. As we head into a new year and a new administration, Hotez joined us for a wide-ranging conversation about his history with Kennedy, his thoughts about the future of public health policy, and what it takes to fight medical misinformation, anti-science activism, and anti-Semitism. From Texas Public Radio, this is Petri Dish. I'm Bonnie Petri.
Support for Petri Dish is made possible by UT Health San Antonio, committed to transforming the health of the community through a team that tackles problems from every angle, doing everything it takes to bring each patient the best possible outcomes. From teaching tomorrow's healthcare leaders to translating research into new treatments, UT Health San Antonio strives to make lives better. Learn more at everythingittakes.org.
at the end so he can answer some questions. Now, without further delay, it is my great honor to welcome Dr. Peter Hotez.
In early December, Dr. Peter Hotez took to the podium at the Jewish Federation of San Antonio to talk about what he calls the deadly rise of anti-science.
Thank you so much.
He wrote a book by that name and its links to anti-Semitism.
This is great. Thank you.
Hotez is a Texas scientist you might recognize as the bow-tied expert talking us through the early years of the COVID pandemic on various news outlets, and he joined us regularly on Petri Dish and in his spare time helped develop a low-cost, easy-to-make, old-school-style COVID vaccine for underserved populations. More than 100 million doses have been administered in India. Hotez is a professor of pediatrics and molecular virology at Baylor College of Medicine, the dean of the National School of Tropical Medicine, and co-director of the Texas Children's Hospital Center for Vaccine Development. And according to Robert F. Kennedy Jr., he's the anti-vaccine movement's OG villain.
A couple of years back on his Instagram, publicly declared me the OG villain. And I'm so old and square, I had to Google that, what that meant. And it means the original gangster villain. So I do appreciate
that. I started interviewing Hotez more than a decade ago about neglected tropical diseases like Chagas disease, dengue, and chikungunya. And believe it or not, it was that work that first got podcaster Joe Rogan's attention.
And we're live. How are you, sir?
How are you?
Good to see you again.
I'm thrilled to be here.
Thanks for doing this, man.
Thanks for having me.
This is back in 2019.
I did not know when I asked you to come back on that you were heavily involved in this whole vaccine debate.
Well, my day job is developing vaccines for tropical diseases. We develop the vaccines no one else will make because they're for the world's poorest people. So we call them tropical diseases, but they really are diseases of poverty. The vaccine issue, the advocacy issue around vaccines and autism is kind of a new thing that I got drawn into just because I'm a parent of an adult daughter with autism and I make vaccines. So it was a natural that I'd get drawn into it.
Hotez's daughter, Rachel, was diagnosed with autism when she was 19 months old back in 1994. And in 2018, he wrote a book about being a vaccine scientist and an autism dad called Vaccines Did Not Cause Rachel's Autism. In doing so, he made himself a lightning rod for the anxiety and even anger of some in the anti-vax movement. Now that Kennedy may soon be molding vaccine policy, I reached out to the OG villain, Dr. Hotez, to talk about it. So let's start there, Dr. Hotez. Here's President-elect Trump during his first post-election news conference talking about the rise in autism cases in the United States over the last few decades.
So 30 years ago, we had, I've heard numbers of like 1 in 200,000, 1 in 100,000. And now I'm hearing numbers of 1 in 100. So something's wrong. There's something wrong. And we're going to find out about it.
Trump said in another interview that we have to get to the bottom of vaccines and autism.
Well, we've gotten to the bottom of vaccines and autism, and we know there's no link. This has been investigated now for 20 years, and we have a massive volume of published scientific papers in the peer-reviewed literature and some of the best journals. You know, they keep moving the goalposts of what their specific concern is. First, they said it was the MMR vaccine, the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine. That was the original assertion. That was debunked. Then RFK Jr. wrote an article in Rolling Stone magazine in 2005 saying it was thimerosal preservative in vaccines. That was debunked. And then it was spacing vaccines too close together. That was debunked. Then it was alum in vaccines. That was debunked. And when I say debunked, it wasn't trivial to debunk. These are large scientific studies, expensive studies, in some cases epidemiologic studies, and others with non-human primates. And then they moved the goalpost again. They said it was the HPV vaccine for cervical cancer and other cancers. They said that was causing infertility or autoimmunity. And that was debunked. Then they copy-pasted the same assertion on COVID-19 vaccines. They said that was responsible for infertility and autoimmunity. That's been debunked. The evidence showing there's no link between vaccines and autism is about the most comprehensive list of scientific papers and information certainly I've ever seen as a scientist.
There's this huge body of research that's found no link between vaccines and autism. But the science doesn't stop there.
Because rightly, parents would say, okay, doc, I get it. Don't blame the vaccines. What is it? And the answer is, we have now detailed genetic maps of the genetic basis of autism. We have 100 genes, at least, that were identified by the Broad Institute at Harvard MIT. We did it here at Baylor. In fact, we found my daughter Rachel's autism genes.
Discovering a genetic basis for autism does not explain the rise in cases, though.
You know, how much of that is due to broadening of autism diagnosis criteria? How much of it is because now to get special services in schools, oftentimes they use autism as a different label? By the way, the numbers are going to go up again because we're getting better at diagnosing girls and women with autism. And we used to say it was 10 to 1 boys to girls and 3 to 1. Maybe it's closer to parity. So the numbers are going to go up again.
The biggest relative increases in autism diagnosis rates are happening among adults between the ages of 26 and 34. Adults were definitely not getting diagnosed in large numbers a generation ago. So that will account for some of the increase. And how about the environment? Dr. Hotez, is there some combination of genetics and environmental triggers that may have become more pervasive over the last few decades that might also account for some of the increase in autism cases?
Yes. In fact, when I was back in 2017, when I was speaking to Robert F. Kennedy Jr., I said, Bobby, you're an environmental lawyer. Why aren't you looking into this?
It is conceivable that Kennedy has looked into this, which may be why the president-elect keeps repeating that Kennedy can do anything he wants, including rewriting dietary guidelines and reining in ultra-processed foods, but he cannot go near oil and gas. Remember that line from his victory speech about liquid gold? Here's Trump at the rally at Madison Square Garden in October.
And I'm going to let him go wild on health. I'm going to let him go wild on the food. I'm going to let him go wild on medicines. The only thing I don't think I'm going to let him even get near is the liquid gold that we have under our feet. I don't know, Elon, he might not like liquid gold. It's oil and gas, sometimes referred to as oil and gas. JD, I think we're going to have to keep him away from the oil and gas. What do you think, Howard? Yes?
Go wild on health unless it's fossil fuels making people sick. And there is a growing body of evidence suggesting that fossil fuels are making people sick. Specifically, particulate pollution might have a role to play in the rising number of autism cases in the U.S. If you listen to the recent Petri Dish on climate change and kids' health, pediatrician Deborah Hendrickson pointed to the fossil fuel industry as a source, both directly and indirectly, for much of that pollution. So, Dr. Hotez, with all of this information out there, why do you think the autism is caused by vaccines myth has such long, strong legs?
It has legs because the anti-vaccine activists give it legs. As the scientific community works to debunk their specific assertion, they just come up with something else, and it's never ending. And now, what's their motivation for doing that? It's hard to say. In some cases, you do have groups that are monetizing the internet, and they're selling fake autism cures. They're selling nutritional supplements that no one needs. They're selling books on Amazon. If you type in the word vaccinations, it's almost all anti-vaccine conspiracy books. So it's its own industry of sorts. And I think it's not a small industry.
Or a new industry.
False assertions against vaccines are almost as old as vaccines themselves, even before vaccination. So the word vaccine comes from the Latin root of the word cow, because the smallpox vaccine believed to have come from a derivative of cowpox, right? So before vaccination, there was something called variolation, which was an attempt to attenuate the smallpox virus by drying it and treating it in various ways. People have gone after that approach, whether it's variolation or vaccination, since colonial times. It goes back to the 1700s when Cotton Mather was an advocate of variolation and his house was actually firebombed for it. So there's that thread throughout American history.
That thread of suspicion and even superstition around infectious diseases goes back much further than colonial American history, and too often it takes on the stain of anti-Semitism.
That's another component I didn't see coming. You know, in some ways, I'm the trifecta. I'm a scientist, I'm a vaccine scientist, and I'm a Jewish vaccine scientist. So it goes back to the times of the Black Death in the middle of the 14th century when they said the Jews were poisoning the well and there were pogroms against Jewish people in Central Europe, in Germany, and elsewhere.
Within just a few years, in the mid-1300s, massacres had decimated 60 larger Jewish communities and 150 smaller ones, all because people incorrectly blamed their Jewish neighbors for the bubonic plague, which is caused by a bacterium spread mostly through flea bites. Dr. Hotez elaborated on the anti-Semitism doctors like him are facing during his December lecture at the Jewish Federation in San Antonio.
One idea that's out there is that there's going to be a day of reckoning for all the COVID scientists when we're going to be tried and executed after a tribunal at Nuremberg that they're calling Nuremberg 2. So this fellow here says, Peter, 75 years ago, people like you were tried, convicted, hung by the neck until dead. There's a lawyers committee right now collecting the names of people to be indicted for Nuremberg crimes. I'm turning your name over to the prosecutor's legal team. He even gives me a website to check out. And then, of course, he says, may the force be with you. So I have that going for me. As well.
Hotez diffused the understandable tension at the lecture with humor, but told me later during our conversation that it's not really funny.
I mean, I do worry. There's no question about it. I mean, it's, you know, every morning the first thing I do is I get the Houston Chronicle and I'm always looking both ways in the, you know, out in the driveway to, you know, and it's just amazing that I have to think that way.
But he does. Back on Father's Day in 2003, when he was outside his house getting that copy of his paper, he was accosted by some guy with a video camera.
Oh, are you Peter Hotez?
I am. Hey.
Nice to meet you.
How are you?
Hey. So why are you not, like, going to debate RFK on Joe Rogan's podcast?
Oh, come on. That's harassing.
I'm just curious. What?
On the video, Hotez retreated into his home as the guy continued performing for his anti-vaccine audience.
I mean, do you think vaccine injuries are real, Peter? Peter, it's just a question. Settle the science now.
Hotez wasn't harmed, but that guy was right there at his house. If his intentions had gone beyond ambush to get a video, he would have been able to.
That's a very dark aspect. And I've tried to turn that around a little bit by using it as a teachable moment. I've written now several articles on the links between anti-science and anti-Semitism. You know, as I say, they're, if you think of them as two circles of the Venn diagram, they're not totally overlapping, but there is some overlap, no doubt about it.
Which brings us back to President-elect Trump's nominee for Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services.
COVID-19 is targeted to attack Caucasians and Black people. The people who are most immune are Ashkenazi Jews and Chinese.
How do statements like that factor into Hotez's fight against anti-Semitism and anti-science? We'll have that when Petri Dish continues.
So
Support for TPR comes from the University of Texas at San Antonio's Brain Health Consortium, a pioneering research hub advancing neuroscience, neuroengineering, precision medicine, and more. Learn more at utsa.edu/BHC.
Welcome back to Petri Dish. I'm Bonnie Petri. In July 2023, then-presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. was at a press event at a restaurant in New York City, eating dinner and, you know, sort of holding court when he claimed that there is an argument, there are air quotes there, that COVID-19 was engineered as a bioweapon to target people of certain races. Someone from the New York Post was recording.
COVID-19 is targeted to attack Caucasians and Black people. The people who are most immune are Ashkenazi Jews and Chinese. And but we don't know whether it was deliberately targeted that or not. But there are papers out there that show the racial and ethnic differential and of impact to that.
We're talking to pediatrician, professor, and vaccine scientist, Dr. Peter Hotez, about the deadly rise of anti-science, which is the title of one of his books, and the links between anti-science and anti-Semitism. So, Dr. Hotez, that statement by Kennedy about COVID was not the first, nor is it the only, example of him saying something that could be construed as anti-Semitic. In an environment where people in your field are already facing an onslaught of hate. I can't imagine that helps.
Yeah, no, it just adds to the aggression, and it's terrible what's going on, you know, trying to blame scientists for igniting COVID-19 when we know COVID-19, which is also known as the SARS-2 virus, began like SARS-1 did through zoonotic spillover. And we have 6 or 7 papers in excellent scientific journals, including Cell and Science, two of the best journals in our field, clearly demonstrating how COVID began through zoonotic spillover. Meanwhile, there's not a single published paper on lab leak or gain of function. It's all phony baloney and performative. And yet that's the narrative that's being put out there.
Now, it is fair, appropriate, and even essential that these types of questions do get asked. Could a lab leak have precipitated the COVID pandemic? In fact, the World Health Organization released a statement on December 30th, 2024, again urging China to share data and access. So, quote, we can understand the origins of COVID-19. The statement continued that it is a moral and scientific imperative. Right now, the preponderance of evidence does point to a zoonotic spillover from a bat, and there is no evidence that the COVID virus was developed by the Chinese or anyone else as a bioweapon to target certain ethnic groups.
You know, how we counter it, I think, is going to be really important, because what's happening now is scientists are being sort of portrayed as sort of shadowy figures in white coats as public enemies. And what I say, you know, Bonnie, is we're a nation built on the strength of our research universities and institutions. This is what gave us the Manhattan Project and victory in the Cold War. If we dismantle our scientific infrastructure, as some are threatening to do, we're not going to be the same country, and it's going to greatly weaken our national security.
This scientific infrastructure, yes, gave us victory in World War II, as Hotez pointed out, with the Manhattan Project, also in the Cold War. And the fight against childhood diseases that just 100 years ago filled cemeteries with tiny headstones.
The end result is a single-dose vial of the live attenuated virus measles vaccine. But the real story of a vaccine is told in the fears and smiles of a little girl, who today is given greater protection than ever before against the infectious diseases of childhood.
That's a clip from a 1964 short film called Mission Measles, the story of a vaccine.
There remain other viruses to be isolated, other vaccines to come, but they will. And like this little girl, millions of children over the world will have an even safer and healthier life.
It's fascinating to me how quickly we've gone from adulation over the development of measles, polio, and other vaccines during my parents' childhoods to my daughter's childhood, during which vaccines began getting the side eye from some parents, to now when RFK Jr.'s lawyer asked the FDA to revoke approval of the polio vaccine. Hotez has deep concerns about the future of the entire childhood vaccine system over the next 4 years.
So we've already got a spillover of anti-vaccine sentiments that accelerated during COVID-19 around COVID-19 vaccines to childhood immunizations. And over the last year, we've had now a fivefold increase in pertussis cases, whooping cough cases from 2023 to 2024. From 4 measles outbreaks in 2023 to 15 measles outbreaks in 2024, we have polio in the wastewater in New York State in 2022. So all roads are going in the wrong direction, even before this. And my worry is that we're going to permanently disrupt our whole vaccine ecosystem, not only because of the federal government, but what's going on at various state legislatures. I'm worried that in many states, they're going to lift all school-based vaccine requirements. And that won't be good. You know, we've eliminated measles from the United States in 2000. I think it could come roaring back. And same with pertussis, you even see the return of polio. And obviously, that would be catastrophic for our nation's children. So that's where I'm worried.
Let's take measles, the most contagious of the childhood illnesses.
And this, the vaccine itself, the end product of medicine's long match with measles.
Measles is a bad actor, right? I mean, if your child has measles, your child has a 20% likelihood of being hospitalized with it. So 20% of kids who get measles are hospitalized. 10% of kids who get measles have measles otitis that can lead to permanent hearing loss. 5% of kids who get measles pneumonia, which is the leading cause of death from measles. And so, you know, we have to really strike home measles as a bad actor. You don't want your child to get measles. You don't want your unvaccinated child to get pertussis. It's a horrible, horrible illness where children are gasping for air because of the toxin produced by the pertussis bacterium that's destroying the airways. So these are bad illnesses that generations of scientists labored so hard to make vaccines. And now you're going to throw in this person or a group that calls themselves disruptors. And that's a euphemism. They're not disruptors, they're destroyers. And I worry about the destruction of our whole childhood vaccination system. And if that happens, it could take us decades to recover.
Trump's nominee to head the CDC is former Florida Congressman Dave Weldon, a doctor who has been outspoken about his concerns over vaccine safety and has promoted that disproven link between vaccines and autism. Johns Hopkins surgeon and author Marty McCary is the nominee to run the FDA, which regulates vaccines for safety and effectiveness. He was an outspoken critic of vaccine mandates during the pandemic. And Trump's nominee to run the National Institutes of Health was a co-author of a document called The Great Barrington Declaration, an open letter written in 2020 that advocated strongly against measures to slow the spread of COVID-19. Instead, he supported letting the virus infect the population unchecked, only isolating the most obviously vulnerable. His name is Dr. Jay Bhattacharya. Trump's appointees, these or others, will assume their roles as infectious disease experts are watching H5N1 bird flu teeter on the precipice of becoming a widespread human problem. And that's not all.
We have a lot of other imminent infectious disease threats. We have H5N1, as you've mentioned. It's no evidence of human-to-human transmission, but that could change given the volume and the force of infection that's happening. Could have another major coronavirus. We've had SARS-1 and SARS-2. We've got the widespread invasion of the Aedes aegypti mosquito that's transmitting arboviruses, dengue, chikungunya, Zika, yellow fever. And with climate change, we're seeing a big acceleration and spread of those viruses out of the Brazilian Amazon rainforest into other parts of Brazil. And what happens in Brazil tends to eventually get to the Caribbean and the Gulf Coast. So I'm worried about all of those viruses now overtaking Texas, Florida, and the Gulf Coast in the coming decades. And then the vaccine-preventable diseases. So we've got some big picture worries that are going to have to be taken by this new administration very seriously. And my worry is if it's not going to be RFK who does it, at least the next tier down has to take it seriously and be empowered to do it.
We have no idea how any of this will play out. It may be great, but to keep yourself and your family safe and healthy, Hotez says, pay attention. But to what? There is medical misinformation everywhere. And artificial intelligence is not just muddying the waters, it's turning the already muddy waters into thick, impenetrable sludge. So how do we make sure we're getting accurate, actionable information?
Well, it's going to be hard because what's happened is, you know, in some ways, I end on a somewhat pessimistic note because I don't think the health sector even knows what to do at this point because it's become a political enterprise linked to American politics. So historically, what we would do is put out timely and accurate information and what the population has to do to protect themselves and their families. And that was historically enough. And now the bandwidth isn't there to get that information out there. So that gives me a lot of pause for concern. And any effort to dismantle and halt health disinformation, well, you saw what happened with X. They, you know, they brought it all back. And I think it's going to be really difficult to counter disinformation, not only against health, but other things as well.
If the election taught us anything, it's that right now Americans exist in information silos. Some of us don't have a single fact in common. That places us firmly in different realities, even if our houses are side by side. And many of us don't know we're in different realities. You might think your neighbors are working from the same set of facts that you are, and so you decide that they must be stupid or selfish or greedy or cruel for making the decisions they make. And they think that you have the same facts they have. And so you must be terrible for making your crazy choices. Your neighbors are as much the heroes in their reality as you are in yours. Social media algorithms create and perpetuate this fractured reality. They keep us in these silos and at each other's throats. This is a problem. I don't have a solution. Neither does Dr. Hotez.
I think we're in a very dark place right now, and there's a lot of uncertainty. And, you know, I'm here at a university. I wind up talking to a lot of medical students and graduate students and residents and postdocs and trying hard to be thoughtful and not ignite any more anxiety. Marie Curie has a great statement, which is, now is not the time to fear. Now is the time to understand. And the more we understand, the less we can fear. And I think that's where we have to focus our efforts.
Now is the time to understand more so that we may fear less. You know, it reminds me of back in the first episode of Petri Dish back in 2020. I told you that information comforts me. That's why I've made gathering it and sharing it my life's work. And as we begin the year 2025, I promise to keep bringing you the most accurate information I can find. This episode of Petri Dish was produced by Jacob Rosati, TPR Vice President of News, Dan Katz, and me. Jacob Rosati composed all of the music and created the sound design. Petri Dish is a production of Texas Public Radio. I'm Bonnie Petri. Talk to you soon.